From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Only days into an unconditional ceasefire between the Afghan government and the Taliban, the war-torn nation of Afghanistan was hit with a string of deadly coordinated attacks on June 11th that have left 33 people dead. The ceasefire was meant to coincide with Eid celebrations that marked the end of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, and that was also supported by the head of the US and NATO forces, General John Nicholson. A meeting of prominent Afghan clerics had gathered in a peace tent and issued a fatwa against suicide bombings, but the attacks on Monday included a suicide bombing in Kabul near the entrance to the tent that killed 14. My guest is Kathy Kelly, co-coordinator of Voices for Creative Nonviolence. She's traveled to Afghanistan many times and worked closely with the Afghan peace volunteers. She just returned from Afghanistan last June 7th, and her new piece in The Progressive is called Afghans Parched for Water, March for Peace. Welcome to the program, Kathy.
Hello, Sonali. Thank you for the invitation.
So this breaking of the ceasefire is, of course, sad news in a country that has been racked with war for so long. And apparently the Islamic State has claimed responsibility for these attacks. But what about the ceasefire that had sounded on the surface really great? It was supposed to be, quote, unconditional, lasting through June 20th around to symbolize the peace that Muslims want to commemorate during the month, during the holy days of Eid. How important was the ceasefire?
Well, I'm told that these are very fragile peacemaking means, the ceasefires, and that often they fail, but that it's a step in a direction. And so I would want to hold out any hope that's possible for an end to this horrific long war. But truthfully, I'm much more encouraged by the walk that people have undertaken from the province of Helmand, the capital, Lashkargah, to Kabul. 700 kilometers, according to Al Jazeera. And that started out with 9 people walking single file, but now there are dozens more walking with them. And I was very moved by the sight on video from Ghazni province of Pashto boys and Hazara girls singing together to welcome the walkers. And there have been throngs of people. So I think there are indications that people are so war weary. I mean, 40 years of war and 17 years of United States warfare in Afghanistan. But it will be, I think, in order to create a lasting peace, necessary to create jobs, to create ways that people can feed their families. And otherwise, people will continue to seek income through the one means that is available for a living wage, and not the only means, but one of the main means, and that's through joining military and paramilitary groups fighting for various warlords, of whom the United States, I believe, is the most well-equipped.
I want to talk more about the march in detail, but to stay on the issue of what the government and the U.S. forces and the Taliban have been attempting to do. These are all three actors with very little credibility in Afghanistan, right? The U.S. military being the force for the greatest of violence in Afghanistan, the Afghan government being rife with corrupt former warlords, and of course, the Taliban, the misogynist, violent fundamentalist organization that is also wreaked havoc on Afghanistan, that these three forces sort of came together to agree to lay down weapons until June 20th was quite significant. And did that pave the way? Because no matter how much ordinary Afghans want peace, the ones with the weapons will keep fighting unless the ones with the weapons are either forcibly disarmed or voluntarily decide not to wage war.
Well, you know, technically, the Taliban had agreed to a ceasefire that would be 3 days in length and wouldn't commence until Friday of this week. And I believe that President Ashraf Ghani has gone to Kandahar province and Tuesday planned to announce the beginning of the ceasefire that he had proposed. In both cases, the Afghan government and the U.S. government had said basically that the ceasefire they were declaring would be exclusive only to the Taliban. In other words, they weren't going to declare a ceasefire with regard to Islamic State in the Khorasan province or any other fighting groups, only with the Taliban. Now, of course, how are we to expect that people can distinguish who belongs to which fighting group? There are so many different groups, and as you mentioned, multiple warlords now included in the Afghan government. But I think we should not presume that this particular ceasefire, being somewhat unusual in the history of the U.S. war in Afghanistan, wouldn't possibly enhance negotiations. I mean, I don't think a war like this can end without negotiations. I do think the Taliban are coming to such potential negotiations with considerable strength because we should acknowledge they've been surrounding cities. And sometimes, as in the case of Kunduz or in Fakhar, they overtook cities temporarily. The Afghan government forces aren't, calling off offensive attacks. They've basically been on the defensive as the Taliban have gained strength in various parts all throughout the country. And then, of course, the desperation of people is exacerbated by the reality that 21 out of 34 provinces are facing drought. And so, there's a tremendous level of chaos and despair,
Let's talk
which
about
makes it even more possible for military groups to recruit.
Right. Let's talk about that drought. And you've written about that. That's in addition to the grinding poverty, and the years of war, the sort of natural phenomenon of the drought, or you might even argue that it is in some sense a man-made phenomenon, is one that is now plaguing Afghans. How important is it for us to understand that the U.S. has done little to nothing about this drought because our tax dollars have gone into Afghanistan, poured into Afghanistan ostensibly for, among other things, infrastructure projects, and yet there are Afghans that are struggling and really dying from this drought that has now plagued the country.
Well, Afghanistan was listed as third in the listing of corrupt countries. I think South Sudan and Somalia rank ahead of it. But you mentioned corrupt warlords, and the corruption is, it seems, endemic throughout the country. And this means that although the United States has put actually more money into Afghanistan than was spent on the Marshall Plan following World War II, the United States didn't follow the money or carefully assure that money didn't, in fact, contribute toward corruption. And so there's been a huge gulf between very, very wealthy people who've sometimes profited because of the war, including the United States' war presence in Afghanistan, and people who are desperately poor. So people whose livestock are thirsting to death and whose crops fail have very few options, and they will often go to the cities that are already overcrowded. Certainly, Kabul being one which has a strained, a stressed infrastructure, almost no adequate water system anywhere in the city. And then when you add so many more people pouring in to seek refuge, it's a prescription for even greater disaster. And the water table is steadily lowering. So it's a very, very fraught and dangerous situation. Now, my contention is that the United States should pay reparations for the suffering that our war making, a war of choice in Afghanistan, has caused over all of these 17 years. And I don't think that the United States should pay reparations directly to the Afghan government or to United States groups that have worked for non-military aid implementation in the past. I think they've got to find different partners, perhaps through the United Nations. But most assuredly, Afghans should not be left to thirst and die. This is a group that has meant no harm to the United States.
And so, in the midst of this devastating drought, a group of people have been marching for peace that you mentioned earlier. Who are the groups that are involved? It sounds like a multi-ethnic effort, which is, of course, critical because ordinary Afghans have long been able to mix within the country, have considered people from groups other than their own as part of the greater Afghan family. It's just been the leaders that have tried to foment differences between these groups. Where did this peace march originate? How long will it go for? And what is their ultimate goal?
Well, in Lashkargah, in the capital of the Helmand province, there was a terrible suicide blast, and people came together and held a 2-month tent vigil. And they were inclusive of women coming forward, and they wanted either the Taliban or the Afghan government or both to respond to their plea for an end to the war, to stop the fighting. And they didn't really receive any response. Now, several other cities also had tent vigils in solidarity, but most of the people in the other cities kind of rolled up their tents and thought, well, that didn't evoke a response. But in Lashkargah, 9 men decided we are going to walk to Kabul and we're going to carry our message forward, and our walk will strengthen our movement. And they were right. Their movement has been strengthened. You see pictures of 9 men walking along a road. One of the men was blinded earlier by one of the suicide blasts that hit his truck. And he has actually said he knows in India his eyesight could be restored, but first he wants to see peace. So they're wearing sandals. Their feet get bloodied. They have to stop along the way and tend to their blistered and bloodied feet. But now they have, I think, been touching the hearts of many people all throughout Afghanistan, and people are joining them. And I was so impressed in Ghazni, where the children turned out, religious leaders turned out. There were many, many people. And I hope this continues as they move to Kabul, and I hope that they can gain world attention. And their message is quite simple. They want to see an end to the fighting. Now, the Taliban in Helmand had said to them, well, walk to a United States military base and we'll walk with you. I think in a way that's valid. I think the United States is the player in this war, being the most well-armed, the most sophisticated, and one of the most brutal of all the warlords.
Of
It
course, though,
is.
associating with the Taliban for peace, people who are marching for peace might be dangerous for them as well, especially for the women who might want to join the group.
Oh, right. I don't think that
Yeah.
they made a poor choice in
Right.
not going to the US base and following the Taliban's lead. But I do think that we have to acknowledge that when the warring parties are named, the United States is certainly one of them.
Yeah. So the peace tent that I mentioned earlier of clerics in Kabul is also an effort that at least seems headed in the right direction. This gathering of clerics, respected in the country, came together ahead of the ceasefire that we discussed earlier, issuing a fatwa against suicide bombings. Is that a very significant move?
Well, again, I hope so, and yet they surely paid a price for that gathering when a suicide bomber attacked the gathering issuing the fatwa.
The height of cruel, violent irony.
There is, of course, also the presence of sometimes they say ISKP, Islamic State. And I think that that grouping is looking to form a caliphate that would be beyond Afghanistan and not really identifying so much with cares and concerns of people in Afghanistan. To persuade the people to put down the weapons is certainly important. It's also important to cut off the supplies of weapons. And there I would again fault the many invading groups who've gone into Afghanistan and left their weapons behind or not kept track of their weapons.
Now, we hear so little in the US media about the Afghanistan war, the longest official war the US has ever waged. And of course, under Trump, he pledged to continue that war, to expand it. And then it just doesn't get much news coverage. News bureaus are not really keeping many of their reporters in the country. So aside from the US role in Afghanistan getting very little attention, you also get very little US media attention to the peace efforts by grassroots groups and ordinary Afghans. Isn't this a really important, problem that we really need to bring up, that the world, including the country whose foreign troops are in Afghanistan, has forgotten once more about the war there?
And I think, as has happened in Iraq and in other countries, there's a sort of cartoonized version of what's going on. Good guys and bad guys in the United States must be on the side of the good guys, and the Taliban are the bad guys. And there's sometimes not much more depth. I'm so fortunate, Sonali, in being able to go and be with the Afghan peace volunteers, who, as they've grown older and matured, have increasingly recognized that a lasting peace would be related to jobs. So I see them trying very hard to form cooperatives to enable seamstresses to get year-round employment, making the blankets that they've distributed free of charge to the neediest of families. They're trying to form a carpentry cooperative. While I was there, their shoemaking cooperative just came sort of online. They opened a store in Kabul. They call it Unique. But I see these kinds of efforts, people being very, very practical, trying to be self-reliant, trying to develop constructive projects. But again and again, I hear from people that the government of Afghanistan has no idea how they're suffering. I spent time with a widow, and she's got five children, and is terrified that she'll end up in a refugee camp herself. And I asked her, do you get any help from the government? And she said, when she told me, they have no idea. She said they began Ramadan without even flour to make bread. And in the refugee camps, the situation is so horrendous. I talked with a fellow who has tried to operate a well that was put in by a non-governmental organization to serve 200 out of 700 families in one of the large refugee camps. And the well wasn't working that day, and there were lines of women, looking panicked, like, what would they do? You can't live without water. So these are very desperate circumstances. And of course, if you pass a United States military base, trucks will go in all day long delivering food and water and supplies. And the contrast between how the United States lavishes money on its own weapon strength in Afghanistan and the utter inability of so many people to find food and water. Where I stayed, the well ran dry, and it was quite a conservation effort to rely just on the tank that a neighbor had graciously allowed this group to have. But, in terms of laundering or cleaning or hygiene, it was a tough week for my young friends.
Well, Kathy, where can people read your work and read about the work that you do with the Afghan Peace Volunteers? Give out any websites that you'd like to alert people to?
Well, thank you. Voices has a website, VCNV. .org. And then there's also a Voices UK website that's maintained, and that's VCNV-UK. I find it very helpful to go to the website of the Afghan Peace Volunteers, and that's called, and you just spell it out, OurJourneyToSmile.com. And then once a month, the Global Days of Listening phone call happens on the 21st, very reliably. It lasts for 3 hours. And sometimes Buddy Bell from Los Angeles hosts it. So I'd strongly encourage people to tune into that and hear from young people, not only in Afghanistan, but other parts of the world as well. And sometimes people with expertise regarding issues related to war, peace, permaculture, cooperatives. And it's usually a pretty uplifting phone call.
Thank you so much, Kathy, for joining us. We'll link to your article in The Progressive from our website, as well as those websites you mentioned. Thanks so much, and good luck to you.
Thank you, Sonali.
Kathy Kelly is co-coordinator of Voices for Creative Nonviolence. She just returned from Afghanistan June 7th. She's traveled there many times. She works closely with the Afghan Peace Volunteers, and her new article in The Progressive is called Afghans Parched for Water, March for Peace. We've been discussing the latest situation in Afghanistan. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.